Today we're very pleased to have Leo Van Hemmen with us. Leo is one of the directors of a Bernstein Center in Munich at the Technical University. It's part of a consortium, isn't it, of other centers. And he has been there, I've discovered, exactly the amount of time I've been here at the SOC. We both moved together. He was at Heidelberg, I was at Johns Hopkins, and both of us were, I think, back then physicists, but now we're working in the computational field together. And last year we published a book together, co-edited the book, which is 23 Problems in Systems Neuroscience, which was probably the longest project that I had ever embarked on. It was 5 years in the running. It stemmed from a conference that Leo and I organized in Dresden in 2000, and the goal was to try to come up with 23 questions in the same way that David Hilbert, for example, set the stage for mathematics 100 years earlier. If you solve a Hilbert problem, you can be assured that you will be well known in mathematics. And so the question is whether or not you solve a Van Hemmen and Sanofsky problem, whether you'll be well known is another question. But we realized that we couldn't do it on our own, so we asked our colleagues to do it. And that was the genesis of the book. So here's Leo, who was going to tell us about snakes and their perspective on heat, reconstruction of input using imperfect detection systems.
Okay. Terry, thank you very much for the introduction. What you see here is not on snakes yet. It is a beautiful, organ. As for the surroundings, you think, oh, that's early Romantics, but the organ is still late Baroque. You are in the province somewhere in the northern part of Holland. where I come from. What I would like to explain to you is snake infrared vision. Oh, that's the summary. By one reason or another, it doesn't like it, starting with the beginning, even though I did it this way. So there we go. What I would like to talk to about is, in fact, an organ you see over there. So indeterminacy and image improvement in snake infrared vision. Well, why vision between quotation marks? What you know is vision through a lens. But what you see here is a big hole. So in a sense, you may ask, wait a second. Vision through a big hole, that can be really good vision. And that's correct. How then can a snake see infrared by means of this pit organ?
So there's another hole to the left of the house.
Yeah, that's the nostril. I would have turned to nostril, pit organ, and then here the normal eye.
So where's the ear?
Snakes do have ears, but you can't see them. They're over there, if you want, but there is no explicit ear. That's a talk of mine for this Thursday at UCSD. Snakes do part of their hearing, at least many snakes, via the two halves of the lower jaw. And in addition, talking about hearing, somewhere the sound hits the scales, and then there is a connection to the ear. So there is an ear, there is a cochlea, and there is an auditory center. You can see the snake ear. Moreover, people thought for quite a while that snakes were deaf. They are not, but they are sensitive to a range between roughly 200 and 1,000 hertz, which is far below what we are used to. So, say, a snake cannot enjoy the Queen of the Night area of one of Mozart's operas. That won't work. Okay, but now back to snake infrared vision. This is work I did together with my graduate student, Paul Friedel, and Andrea Sichert did most of the work. What's the idea of this talk? You should have learned, from Terry, a good talk consists of three parts. This one has three parts, a biological introduction. Then we'll focus on the optics of what I would like to call the pit hole instead of a pinhole camera. And then how a snake, in spite of the bad quality of the pithole camera, still can see. This is the original publication, and if you want to read an excellent explanation, much better than what we did, you should read Bert Schwarzschild's story in Physics Today of September of last year. So how good are snakes in infrared vision? Now here you see two snakes. So that's an albino rat, so not a kind, too kind an animal, it's a rat, but an albino. You do not want to commit suicide when you work with rats, so you take albinos. Here you see two snakes. They have their normal eyes covered. You simply tape it. That doesn't hurt the eye at all because the eyes are more or less scratch-free. Sand doesn't matter. The tape doesn't stick, so the eyes are covered. And now look at both. I'll let the film run. And look at both snakes, also at that one too. And you'll see how this snake will observe what's happening between these two with, say, great interest. And the upshot then is that using their infrared vision, because that's the only kind of vision remaining on this time scale, snakes can make an accurate representation of their surroundings. That's what you already what you see. Thing. So pop, it hits. As you know, rats in danger are not very pleasant animals. So as a snake, it's better to hit it precisely. But where? And the answer is behind the ears. You chuck, hit it behind the ears, bite, and that's it. And during this time, the snake cannot do anything. So this is a very good policy, and the snake can precisely locate the place where it has to hit the rat. How does it do so? This is again the animal I would like to focus on. These are so-called pit vipers with pit organ, so that's one hole and one pit organ behind it. So nostril, pit organ, eye. Here you have the boids, that's the other group, that have infrared vision. And here you see a whole number of holes, both at the upper jaw and here you see over there at the lower jaw. At both sides, of course. I won't discuss these. In principle, it's the same. In practice, it's slightly different. But once you've noticed how it works, this is, say, would be the topic for a different talk. But it's technique once you've understood how it might work. So, nostril, pit hole, eye. The organ size, this is about 1 millimeter. This is not a huge snake, it's about that. And the pit membrane at the back of the organ is sensitive to temperature variations down to 1 millikelvin. You could also see 1 millidegree Celsius, that's the same. So down to 1 millikelvin. That's amazingly sensitive. But keep this in mind. And how then can the snake get a map? A map is a neuronal representation of the outside sensory world. And my assertion is the snake has a map. And one has found it in the optic tectum, where normal vision and what I would like to call infrared vision come together. Now let's first focus on the pit organ. So here's the same picture. By the way, the photograph is due to Guido Westhoff in Bonn. He can take very good photographs, and I made the cut. You also should know when you have a photograph, making a cut is can be an art. Lina, for those who work on pattern recognition, Lina is a wonderful example of making the right cut. Be that as it may, so here you have the pit membrane. It's very thin, 15 microns. That is 1/5 of a piece of paper quite a few of you have in front of them. So it's 15 microns, very thin. The heat capacity is negligible. Here you have air. There you have air. Air insulates rather well. So the infrared radiation coming in is then observed here by receptors in the pit membrane. Roughly, say here, we took 40 by 40, say 2,000. The maximum number I'm aware of is 8,000 receptors, but take 2 to 4,000 receptors in the pit membrane. This diameter is 1 millimeter, so that's 1 millimeter. This is twice as big, meaning that the surface of the pit membrane is 4 times as large as the surface of this big hole, which already tells you that if the principle were that of a pinhole camera, then it's a very bad pinhole camera, as the membrane here is 4 times as large as the diameter of the hole. Good. But you see, it has been made for infrared detection, very thin, neatly insulated from the back over there. And, of course, with these 2,000 receptors, that is a natural restriction of the accuracy. When you do a computation, you see the resolution cannot be more than 3 degrees. Yeah? You ask, what color? Here, this is infrared. I come. Yes, since these are infrared detectors, they don't care about vision, the visible part of the spectrum. Moreover, say, during night, why worry about the visible part of the spectrum?
I worry about the mechanics, right? How does it keep the visible from heating it up?
That's a different story. It's an infrared detector. You just have to build the right kind of molecule. More or less, that's the answer. Oh, yeah, okay. I'm not an expert on the molecule, since this kind of molecule doesn't interest me. Here the eyes, the input, the visual input, goes directly to the center over there. And now you see here is the pit organ. There is a nucleus in between with mouth of snakes, and then it goes here also to the optic tectum. So that directly to the optic tectum, here there is one station in between, then it also goes to the optic tectum. So that's where both the visual input and the infrared input come together. And if you wish, they are merged. What about the input?
What's the sensitivity profile of
their eyes? I wished it were known. The precise sensitivity profile has not been measured yet. Sorry. Would be nice. I agree. But that's something people should do. But anyway, what about the optics? Now, this is more or less here you have the wavelength, and this is the infrared part. Here you see, if you wish, you can call this a profile of the input, but the window for infrared in air is about here. And when you look at this is a distribution, the normal distribution for a radiating body, 30 degrees Celsius. And you see, well, here you have 75% of the energy. The window left by air is about here. So that's what we can focus on. And that's then a factor of 100 smaller than the width of our pit hole. Camera, or if you want to be precise, of the pinhole camera. Since the diameter is so large, you can forget about diffraction and all that and simply use geometrical optics, which makes life much easier. And as I said, the atmospheric transmission window picks about this part. There we go. How does the pinhole camera work? Well, I think all of you, or nearly all of you, know it. When you have a very small hole, there's a one-to-one map between the object and the image. So we have a sharp image. If you make the diameter larger, then you see, well, too bad, but the image gets blurred because many points map onto the same point here. Well, that's it. And here, when the hole becomes too large, the picture gets totally blurred.
And that's the case for the snake. Oh, of course, with a pinhole camera, you can make nice photographs. Here you see two examples. These are sharp, but you have to wait for quite a while before you get this kind of image. That's the trouble. And the snake has this big hole. Why is that? Well, here you see some typical numbers. It may take you minutes, so you have to wait very long. That can't happen because the prey, the typical prey, is, say, take this rat. The rat is not an animal sitting in the sand, quietly reading Goethe and thinking about sense of life. But it's passing by and running. That's the typical way of movement. Well, too bad, but that's too fast. How can we get more energy per unit of time, make the hole bigger? And that's why the hole must be so big. These are not very hot animals, say 30, at most 40 degrees centigrade, and that's it. So make the hole bigger, and then the image is so bad. Good. We have taken a specific example as illustration. This is Dürer's hair. As you see, Albrecht Dürer, 1502, and discretized the hair. There's the discretized hair, and this we took as input. And that's the upshot. For a typical pithole camera, that's the image of the discretized hair over there. And what do you see? Answer, nothing. However, the snake must get a rather precise image out of this totally blurred picture. How is that possible? Well, maybe reconstruction. And our suggestion is neuronal reconstruction, and you will see in a minute why we have rather good reasons for assuming this. So, the pithole organ doesn't have a lens. You are in the infrared, and there are no infrared lenses. So the only way to get a precise image is a neuronal reconstruction, which we like to call the virtual lens. I-beta is the input. You get a two-dimensional image of a three-dimensional input. Add some noise, leaves that pass, or twigs of a shrub, or who knows what. This then is the total input. Then you get a geometrical factor providing, say, detector alpha with intensity S. So here the input, then a geometrical factor, add some noise. And of course, the membrane may also have some noise, so we have two types of noise. Remember, the input noise is yellow, and the intrinsic noise of the membrane is red. And now the answer is, can we reconstruct the original image? I'll come to that. It's a geometrical factor. So for the moment, it's a geometrical factor, and you'll see, well, looking at, you have some image, you have a big hole, there's some geometry determining what comes through the hole to the membrane, but I come to that. So the goal is finding an optimal reconstruction. Forget about neurobiology. We just, given the intensity S beta on the membrane, want to find a matrix so that we can reconstruct the original image. Now, what's the geometrical factor? This was the original picture. The geometrical factor produces out of this discretized picture that what you have already seen. And if, for instance, here you had a point source, then the point source would give this kind of homogeneous image on the membrane, illustrating quite nicely why the image is so bad. Well, there you have the normal. Then phi alpha beta is the angle between the input and the normal. Then you get a cosine. If this is zero, then of course you have a flat angle and the radiation is doing this. For pi over 2, well, then the plane doesn't get anything. And intensity increases with 1 over r squared. Life is that simple. And for instance here, it's a geometrical factor. If the source, the point source, a soldering iron, that has been taken, by the way, in experiments, a soldering iron, it doesn't hit either this part or that part, then you get zero. So it's purely geometrical, determined by distance and by the angle between the normal and the plane and the incoming radiation. Good. And because this is an outside pixel on that's a beta, for instance, or you build up the hair out of many pixels beta, and you look at alpha where you end up here. We have quite a bit of noise, so the criterion is minimize the quadratic error. For a perfect reconstruction, we would get zero, but we can at least try to minimize it. This is an exercise, and here's the solution. And what we wanted was finding this matrix, that's the input, reconstruct the original distribution. And lo and behold, there is the equation determining this matrix. This is a problem you can solve. This is matrix notation. One is the inverse of the other, so that's the inverse of this one. These are parameters relating to the noise of the input and of the membrane, which are still at the disposal of the animal, and you have to solve this equation. It can be solved. So there exists a solution for an optimal reconstruction. The next question then is, well, if you solve it, learn this is possible. There you have the reconstruction. Does that work? Well, anyway, once you've learned it, you are done once and for all. And moreover, you can realize this kind of reconstruction neuronally straightforwardly. A typical receptive field looks like this one. So this is a piece of membrane. Here you see red means excitatory, blue means inhibitory. There was a nucleus in between, as a reminder. Blue means inhibitory, connection to a specific neuron in the optic tectum. And what you see is this came out of the computation. So that looks like an edge detector. Excitatory, inhibitory, boom, there you go. Now, mind you, if, for instance, the soldering iron would be there and tuned precisely right, then here it would excite this ring over there, and that's it. However, if it's too big, go back, then you get excitation and inhibition, and the net effect would be practically zero. So what you get is a bunch of edge detectors. Now, the art consists in taking a linear combination of appropriate receptive fields so as to reach this. So this is the upshot of solving the problem, original input, blurred image on the pit membrane, and this is what you would get without noise, and this is what you get with noise. Well, you see, also as a snake, you could still easily work with this kind of picture and hit the animal if you wished, for instance, just behind the ears. So we automatically get, in this way, a neuronal reconstruction. What's the dependence upon the noise? Well, and when you think about it, first you think, oh, mamma mia, this is pretty bad, but it isn't bad at all. This is the input of the membrane noise. So here you see that's workable. Well, here, boo, and here it's completely gone. But now you have to realize you have a huge hole. And if then over there on the membrane you have a little error that corresponds to a huge amount of possibilities in the outside world corresponding through this big hole to a little error here. If you had a two-pinhole camera, one pixel in, one pixel out, well, you can vary it a bit, but you wouldn't notice any difference. But now you have such a big hole, meaning that you get a huge indeterminacy on the pit membrane. And now we suddenly remember that what was the accuracy of the snake pit membrane? 1 millikelvin. So that fits. Now we suddenly understand, of course, it makes sense. The accuracy is amazingly good, and the snake also needs it, because for reconstruction, due to this big hole, it needs a high accuracy, otherwise the reconstruction cannot work. And now, of course, you may say, well, wait a second, yes, from a technological point of view, it's a convincing argument, but what's going on in the snake? Oh, here is the answer. I do not know why biologists didn't notice it, but Hartline already determined with co-workers the infrared map in 1978, so roughly 30 years ago. This is the visual map, okay? And you see a resolution of better than 10 degrees. This is the infrared map, also 0, 10 degrees, bob there, 10 degrees. So you can safely say that the accuracy of the infrared vision is, well, at least plus or minus 5 degrees, at least. This is the proof. Otherwise, you couldn't determine it. It was determined by means of a soldering iron, which they moved. And since you can discern 10 degrees from 0 degrees, the resolution is at least plus or minus 5 degrees. Cha. So the precise infrared map does exist in the snake's optic tectum. And now you may ask, of course, what we provided here is an existence proof, but it's even better. It gives you a feeling for what's going on, as the infrared should be, the receptor fields should be something like edge detectors. And also, what you see here, this is in principle what you would have expected, at least me too, and so did, by the way, Hartline et al. If this is the infrared map, the visual map, and then the infrared map should correspond one to one with the visual map. And those of you who have ever seen a Barnow map, the auditory map of the Barnow corresponds in the optic tectum one to one with the visual map. And here, why is that? Well, that's what you would expect, because also from a physical point of view, clearly, it's very handy if two modalities of the same animal tell the animal the very same thing. So, why is that? Now, let me be honest. Great praise for Hartline et al. They speculated that inhibition might well diminish anesthesia. And this here, the anesthesia, well, diminishes the inhibition. Yeah. We have meanwhile found, that was later, literature that indeed confirmed what they said. So let's then try. We have a model. That's the big advantage when you do computational neuroscience. You can easily verify your assumptions. You needn't ask anybody for permission. You just do it. So what we did here, we slightly diminished the inhibition and took a look at the effect for the response here. And what we saw was exactly a shift, a blowing up of the map, and a shift in the right direction. So our map also confirms what Hartline et al. Already speculated. If you diminish inhibition as a consequence of anesthesia, then lo and behold, you get exactly the effect. Then you have also explained why the maps as measured didn't agree completely. Without anesthesia, it's of course handier, but working with a poisonous snake that is alive and well, you have to be quite experienced so as then to do your experiment. Okay. So, we could explain this as well. To summarize, first of all, you have seen, we have seen, that the pit organ is a very rude pinhole camera. That's why I like to call it, this is the pit hole camera with a very bad optic quality. A point source lits here a whole part of the pit membrane, implying that the optic accuracy, the optic resolution, is very low. However, the snake, as we now know, has a well-defined map in its optic tectum produced by the snake's infrared vision. So if we take here Dürer's hair as a test, discretize it, and map it through the pithole camera, then you see, well, that's the image. However, there exists a reconstruction algorithm, and now you can add noise, but you should not add too much noise on the membrane because of the big hole. And that's consistent with the very high temperature resolution of the pit membrane in the order of 1 millikelvin. So it explains this high temperature resolution as well. So to summarize, the map is neuronally possible. Though there is a natural restriction in the resolution because of the finite number of receptors, that's about 3 degrees. But in this range, the map, the neuronal reconstruction resulting in the map can be explained. And we have also explained the high thermal sensitivity. The conclusion is snake infrared vision at the end, despite the bad optical quality, does exist. So, to leave you with two pictures, what is all this good for? Of course, this is the Bavarian way of looking at it. That's what it's good for. Well, maybe this is the better explanation. Thank you.
About motion, whether or not snakes pick up motion cues, because when they're going after these rats, they're moving, and the pit will crash.
Excuse me, what do you want to see? Let's first.
So it, one more back or forward. All right, up, forward.
Okay.
It's your reconstruction.
Yeah.
Forward. It's any of these. So let's look at the 0.25%, the top left.
Yes.
So I want to understand how to read that. It's aliased, and that's 40 by 40, right?
Yep.
And this is an inverse function. This is what you get when you generate your reconstruction of the rabbit. Now, it's blurrier than the rabbit. And one reason why it's blurrier than the rabbit is just because it's aliased, it's 40 by 40. And it's not capturing the...
that's a good point. Here, so this is, if I do it by heart, this is with... I have also, boom, they had a picture without noise at all. Okay.
We're going to have to go back to the
picture. Yeah, fine.
Not as clear as the rabbit is because it's aliased.
Yes.
Another reason is because the averaging in each of those boxes is not exactly the average you'd get if you actually aliased the rabbit.
You always have a specific realization of the noise. So, specific realization of the noise. You'll never see the average for a specific picture.
I think you're answering my question, but I haven't quite interpreted the answer. So here's my question. It's not true that you can reconstruct B as being out there in the world. So it has to be, it's indeterminate. There are going to be lots of things like B that are in the world. How is that represented in the picture?
You can reconstruct it in this case precisely. Or precisely given the resolution, of course, when you have, indeed, that's correct, when you have discretized the picture because of the discrete resolution that's available on the pit membrane, then you can never do better than that. Okay, good. So that's what we agree on. But as for the rest, you can. More or less, also mathematically, you can solve the equation. And if you couldn't, well, take a pseudo-inverse or whatever you want, something like that.
That was a point, but I couldn't believe it. It really is invertible. It really is exactly.
In this case, yes, it is. That's quite neat. You can do it. I also have a picture of the reconstruction. It's somewhere dangling around in the talk.
Why is that? It turns out that there's exactly one image.
If you can invert a matrix equation, go ahead, but I can't.
Okay.
You have to do it. Yeah.
Okay, Justin. I'm interested, you mentioned the barnyard owl, and I'm wondering if you're interested in how the optic system could be tuning this up, if you think it is tuning it up.
That's indeed what we think. But how it works precisely, that's for my next talk.
Yes. I was wondering what you think the BOA is doing with its 10 sensors.
That's also a very interesting topic. How to do it precisely. Part of it is, of course, hard work. Yeah, that's clear. Point. Too bad. But there are a few interesting problems that are new as compared to the bitfires, because the receptors are even ruder. But nevertheless, it still works. But if you would then ask me how well precisely, that's what we are figuring out at the moment. So I can't give you numbers. Yeah, but you can do it. That's also, Andreas is working on this, but, well, everything takes a finite time.
This sounds actually more interesting than the second question, which was, it's known, for example, that human eye and also cameras used in astronomy and so on have super resolution in the sense that we move our eyes all the time, right? So if you show, say, three lines and then you tilt one just a little bit, much less than the receptor spacing on the retina, you can still perceive the distance because the brain reconstructs the picture from the movements and everything. So in this case, when you say it's a millikelvin sensitivity, it's not. But that doesn't seem like an important parameter because you really care about the millikelvin per square of hertz, right, or times square of seconds. So if you have motion, is it conceivable that the snake's head motion will improve that resolution given the speed of the receptor reaction, so that you can actually construct a much finer resolution picture from the combined?
Wait a second. To pinpoint it down, you are saying that the snake doesn't. Why talk about a millikelvin thermal resolution? The snake could also do with tenths, or a tenth of a degree.
So I'm saying if it has a degree,
yes, right, or even a degree, if it works.
If it has a thousand times the resolution limit of the sensitivity of the detector, right? And you can trade that for spatial accuracy by moving the eye and measuring many samples, so to speak. And then so you could actually get much more than the 40
but it doesn't.
Pixels.
It doesn't.
Has that been shown?
Yes, it doesn't. Moreover, say also theoretically, if you have a camera with that wide a hole, and there's no lens, so it's not a pinhole, it's that wide a hole. It simply means that any indeterminacy here corresponds to a huge amount of indeterminacy in the outside world. Yes.
Then you can take the ratio of the two, and then you can, if you know that it's a sharp edge, then you can determine with much better precision than the detector spacing.
First of all, I'm not aware of the fact that the snake is doing it. And in addition, doing it for a whole image, you need a fairly big brain.
Humans do it.
Yeah, okay.
But they said you need a fairly big brain.
Well, but even if the snake does not move its head, the rat is moving.
Yeah.
And I guess John mentioned that could be the equivalent. In other words, it's possible that. What is the temporal time constant for the infrared detectors? Do they have a?
As far as I know, it's about, I would say 50 milliseconds.
That's pretty good. Okay. So it will, as the rat moves across, be able to track it then.
Yeah.
Yep, Mike.
So the infrared and the visual converge on the object detector.
Yeah.
So do we know if one of the modalities is missing from birth, if that affects the development of
very good question. We thought of that. There is one case, so one case known of a snake that from its birth onwards did not have vision. So there's one described case, that's all. And it can more or less locate the prey by means of the infrared. Of course, we thought of it. The trouble is that there is quite a bit of coordination between the development of normal vision and infrared vision, even though, say, since the snake is blind, normal vision isn't there. So we think that's something that still has to be tried out. We think that one that may suffice. Say the trouble is, by now the snake is dead. And you can't do any experiments. So there's this only lonely case. But quite interesting, and Ken Cardon in Pullman described it many years ago. We thought of it, and we think we can explain it, but it's a longer story. In view of the known accuracy, the animal wasn't awfully good, but it managed more or less. That will do it. So it has to do with the correlation of visual and infrared input. Yeah.
So what's known about where this transformation takes place? Is it in the colliculus or is it before the colliculus?
The transformation, we think, the only thing you need is the appropriate synaptic, the amount of synaptic connections. So if it were in the optic tectum, done. But how it works precisely, that's, say, an object of study. Yeah, but I'm quite confident that it will work.
If you added a clue, like light's always from the top, or animals move forward, or the motion stuff, that would make the snake much more precise. And why is it that we gravitate, or you're interested in gravitating, toward a general solution, when just a few little clues probably would give the snake a bunch more accuracy? I think sunlight's on the top is probably a good clue.
You have to realize that what the snake effectively is hitting is a specific point behind the ears of the rat. And for the snake's health, it's better to hit it there and not elsewhere. How to get it? For that, you need a decent precision. And the snake running, so one more or less. Then the next question is, what's radiating? Yeah, what's radiating? Now, let us think, what's radiating? But rocks are not edible. So these are completely boring. And effectively, what the snake infrared vision seen is not the rock, even though it may be very hot. Only moving objects, so that's handy. Because edible objects are moving here. So that's good. What the rat is radiating? The eyes. When you take an infrared picture, you always see the eyes. The tail. There are no hairs or no cover. The tail is also radiating. But when the tail is passing, it's a bit thin. And moreover, then the animal is gone. So aiming at the tail is not a good idea either. And then you have, it's a gland just behind, I've forgotten the precise name, directly behind the ears. Where's a whole lot of fat, and it's well provided by warm blood. For one reason or other, it's there. So it's also radiating. And since now, you take an infrared camera, the camera doesn't radiate.
So the eye tracker is
Sure, you have to take care of that, but if you do it just in a dark room.
Yeah, so the fact that rabbit that you used for reconstruction really was the wrong...
It's wrong. Huh?
Yeah, it's the wrong kind of image.
So what could have
picked? You should have picked something that, you know, infrared, you can get, you know, you can, there are infrared cameras, you can get an infrared picture of a rabbit or...
The trouble is, no, we have thought about it, and let me be honest, clear, we wanted a nice picture.
But there aren't. There may not be edges.
Yeah, it's a little bit fuzzy, as I recall. That may be the camera, though.
Yeah, but the trouble is, all these are at least the infrared pictures we have seen. They all have fake colors. So, what's the real quote unquote real color? All the infrared images you see are always provided with fake colors. That's the trouble.
That's all you get from one type of receptor.
That was Mark.
Oh.
Well, I was going to ask, I mean, what's the temperature difference? You mentioned it is gland and the retina, and, you know, these different parts. What's the temperature difference?
As far as I know, a few degrees.
So it's like, you know, many thousands of
degrees. Yes, wait a second. Exactly, but that's why our hair was not so bad. Because it doesn't have a whole bunch of different colors. It's a variation of more or less dark coat. So it's by no means bad. It's just a variation of intensity. That's what we wanted. And since, in addition, it was a nice picture and it was now okay, it illustrated exactly what we wanted to illustrate. Well, that's it.
To see if the snake attacks it from the back or from the front.
I love the idea. Yes, I can ask Bruce. Bruce Young is one of my collaborators. I do not know whether Guido will do it this way. Yeah, that's nice. don't worry. I'll show another film this Thursday. You can take a long pincet and then do that. These people working with snakes have these long pincets, so don't worry.
Is the infrared world edgy? Meaning, is this a 1/F profile?
Maybe. It depends on the. It really depends on the object.
If it the visible world is.
Yeah.
If the infrared world is not. Does that make this algorithm less?
No, it works nicely. It works nicely. And in this sense, also you saw the different parts of the hair, even though the contrasts were not very big.
But edgy parts in the vicinity could help.
Let me see. Come on. So, let me see.
It's still hard to understand.
Yeah. What's happening here? What is this? That's what that part over there. What's that?
You on the screen. Yeah. Try to escape or something. Hit enter. It's going to go to that slide.
Wait a second. So. Okay, yeah. Thanks. It was escape. Here we have the hair. So, bloop. That's the input. And you see it has a whole bunch of gradations. There are no clear colors, but just different parts of brown, black, and a bit of white over there. So there we go. So that's the image. And so this is the computation. Now we want to see. So that's the receptor field. Plop. There we go. Without noise, there it is. Without noise, that's the above is the reconstruction. Without noise, and below you have with noise. So there it is, that's with noise. But more or less, you can reconstruct the whole picture. That was not the reason why we took it, or better, why I took it. And here you see it then with noise. So there we go. But the amount of this, say, the discretized image, it's, I would say, most of it is, the contours are fairly soft. They aren't too hard. That's okay. With hindsight, even that fits.
So the input is actually not discretized, right? It's actually,
The input is discretized. That's this one, that's the input.
But the real image is it's a real object, right?
Well, that was for the reasons of convenience. Yeah, you simply need for computation, you need a finite time, and that's it. But by the way, also here, this is just, a bunch of gradations in gray, and that's it. 258, that's all. Done.
it's called eyelash filtering.
Well, without my glasses, it's blurred anyway.
That's true. Squeaky eyes. It's called image.
Okay.
And then the first question is why, as physiologists, why would we suspect that the algorithm is a general algorithm rather than one that involves clues, generalities about the world, such as sun's on top?
Yeah, but why do we need that?
We don't. It might improve performance. If it improves performance, natural selection.
Yeah, it might improve performance, but this one gives enough performance, explains a whole bunch of phenomena, and we want to correlate it with, to be honest, the visual system, which is a natural teacher. Neatly, which is nice to know, that even this kind of snake, during daytime in the Mojave Desert, you know, it's a very pleasant surrounding, huh? Then the snake is looking for a shadowy place. And by means of its infrared vision, it can find it, because now it needs a cool hole. And holes are always cool. It's not black hole radiation, but, in a sense, but now negative radiation. There you go. That's the way in which they do find shadowy place.
Without physiologic evidence, it is impossible to know whether or not the general solution,
sure,
or a general solution plus specific clues.
Yeah. Oh, I fully agree. Not at stake.
Okay, well, I guess we really don't know what it's like to be a pit biker, do we? Okay, well, thank you again.